everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Seeds of Destruction when we come back. You know, once in a while, we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now you know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings. We dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now that was John Swinton, and he said that in 1880. And these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order nightmare. They are the men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, then call and order our free general law CD package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about Seeds of Change. Now, I told you where to get that Seeds of Change article on the GMOs. That's the Money Changer, March 2008. The guy's name is Franklin Sanders. Pretty good old boy. I think you'll like him. It's one of the three newsletters that I recommend. The number to call here is 888-218-9226. Tell him that you can tell him George Gordon sent you. He's not mean to me. 888-218-9226 now is his number. But this thing called Seeds of Change goes deeper than the GMOs. It actually goes into Bible prophecy. Let me show you. In Revelation chapter 6, this is the famous four horsemen of the apocalypse. And you've probably heard, you know, about the red horse and the black horse and the pale horse. But there's another horse in here, the white horse. Nobody ever talks about this white horse. And I got thinking about that. I wonder why nobody talks about the white horse. Because deception, lying, hypocritical deception, kills more people than the other three horses combined. Let me show you. It says here in the first verse, it says, I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, come and see. And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow and a crown. A crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. All right? Pretty short and to the point. That's an extrapolation from Matthew 24, verses 4 and 5, 11, 23 through 28. Let me run that one by you again. Write this down and check it out and see for yourself. What we're dealing with here is false prophets. False prophets. These lying false prophets come along. Katie Couric, Brian Williams. That's just a couple. That's why I pointed out to you here, John Swinton, back in 1880, when he was being honored at a banquet over here, said, let me tell you where it's at. This is an insider telling you that you're being lied to by the press. The Hearst newspaper chain, USA Today, the television news media, Charlie Gibson, nice guy. God love Katie Couric, nice lady. The only problem is they come on the air and they lie to you all the time. Then you believe the lies, and these lying deceptions lead you to a wrong conclusion which ends up in killing you. That's why these people, these false prophets, kill more people than the other three horses combined. Now, we were warned about these false prophets throughout the Scripture, both Old and New Testaments. Tell you, watch out, be careful, pay attention. You got lying hypocrites and false prophets out there. Let's identify a couple. Now, if you go to Matthew chapter 24, verses 4 and 5, verse 11, and verses 23 through 28, tells you about these false prophets. Now, Revelation 6 is a corollary chapter to Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. The background was fairly simple. The disciples came up to the Messiah one day and they said, hey, boss, tell us what's going to be like in the end of the world, the end of the age. And he said, well, gather around, children, and let me tell you the answer. And he did. Matthew 24 is a hair raiser. He tells you the answer to the riddle. Now, the book of Revelation is a prophecy of this end time period called the Great Tribulation. There are some 30-plus prophecies in Scripture, starting with Moses, concerning this Great Tribulation period. A period that the Messiah said had never been equaled in the history of the world. Not even Noah's flood, he said, would compare to it. Now, that's kind of hair-raising. Noah's flood killed everybody in the world but eight people. And yet, there's going to be more than eight people survive. In fact, it's 10% of the world's population from the time this Great Tribulation begins until it's completed and the second coming is over and done with. 10% will survive. 90% are going to die. That's the point that I'm making. That's the point that Franklin Sanders is making. That's the point that William Engdahl is making in his book, Seeds of Destruction, which is a similar title to Jeffrey Smith's book on GMOs called Seeds of Destruction. These GMOs are now the last ditch effort in a failed agribusiness economy. You see, we deviated now from agriculture in 1945 after World War II. We went into agribusiness. We went into chemical farming. GMOs are the last step. GMOs is a last gasp, last ditch effort to save agribusiness. And that's because we have destroyed the soils. If you take a look here in the United States, we have destroyed our soils. And we've gone into monoculture. We have abandoned agriculture. Small farms are a thing of the past. We're now in the era of multinational corporate agribusiness. And in this agribusiness model, they have to feed 6.5 billion people. And the soils are wearing out. Desertification is setting in. There is less and less available farmland to feed more and more mouths. And the farmland that we are using is becoming weaker and weaker and producing less and less. And so in the business model, we got to do something to jack it up. Now, we were told not to do that in Leviticus 19:19. Remember, I showed you that last time. Now, with that in mind, let me take you to a new story over here. It came from the Heartland Institute. Remember Heartland? Told you about them last time. It's called The Environment and Climate News, published by the Heartland Institute. And their address is the Heartland Institute, 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903, Chicago, Illinois. And their zip code is 60603. All right, now they put an article in here. The commission wants to double the federal gas tax. At the bottom of this, as old Dan Rather used to say, is follow the money. So let's see if we can wrap our heads around the story here. What in the hell is going on? Well, the federal government should more than double gasoline taxes in the next 5 years to subsidize light rail systems and to pay for highway improvements, a panel chaired by the U.S. Secretary of Transportation has decided. Under such a plan, spending would raise by $225 billion to $340 billion a year. That's an amount larger than the 2007 national deficit. In a January 15th announcement, the National Surface Transportation Policy and Review Study Commission also recommended the federal government should increase road tolls, set economic penalties for peak hour driving, and hike taxes on freight transportation. Not only do they want to double your federal gas tax, now listen to this now. They want to double your gas tax. And then they want to increase your toll road fees. Then they want to set economic penalties for peak hour driving. So if they catch you on the highway between 4 and 6 o'clock, maybe they're going to add a toll to that. I don't know how they're going to collect it. And then they want to hike taxes on freight transportation. Well, my God. Everything that you buy, everything that you use, comes by freight. So all we have to do is raise that by 1%, and that's going to increase your total cost by 2%. Now, how do you like that? But there's more. Now, there's no free lunch, Jack Schindorf, I guess it is. Vice chairman of the commission told reporters at a January 15th news conference. No way to accomplish what we're talking about without spending money. And therefore you have to raise money. There's no way to avoid that. The details of the new tax proposal contradicted Schindorf's no free lunch assertion. The commission envisions automobile drivers paying substantially higher gasoline taxes to subsidize light rail transportation systems that relatively few people use. There's no shortage of funds for highways, said Randall O'Toole. He's an urban growth and transportation expert at the Cato Institute. The problem is that too great a share of federal highway user fees, 40%, is already being diverted to transit and other non-highway activities. Very important point there. See, the law was created to generate the money to keep the highways and the bridges and everything in repair. This thing generates so much money that they're already diverting 40% of it to other uses. So your highway gasoline taxes, your federal highway gasoline taxes, 18 cents a gallon. have 40% of that 18 cents. Let me just put this down. 18 times 0.40. 7 cents of it is already being diverted to other uses. It's a cash cow is what it is. Well, it's a hell of a neat deal, isn't it? Now what they want to do is they want to double that 18 cents to 36 cents. So we're going to raise your gasoline prices. Here it's about $3.50 a gallon, so they're going to raise it to $3.68. That's just the first step. Remember I reported to you, I said, what's going on here with this global warming program? I reported this to you here a couple weeks ago. Global warming is the vehicle that we're using here to create in your mind a need to do this. We have to solve this global warming problem. Wake up. Global warming is the problem. We have to solve this problem. Now, once we get that into your head, see, with propaganda, you get that in your head. Global warming. You understand that? Global warming. Then we're going to come along and tell you, geez, we've got to have a dollar a gallon gasoline tax. If I walk up to you and say, I want to raise your gas tax by a dollar a gallon, that'll just make you mad. So what we're going to do is we're going to come along here in little increments over here, like the camel, you know, sticking his nose into your tent. And we're going to double the gasoline tax. And then we're going to add to freight revenue taxes. And then we're going to bump up your toll road expenses. And then we're going to penalize people, you know, that are driving from 4 to 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Or from, say, 6 to 8 o'clock in the morning. If you're out here driving at the peak hours over here, we're going to tax you some more. Now, the objective behind all of this, remember, is to destroy the economies of the Western industrialized world. Now, that's already been accomplished. Now that we've destroyed our economies over here, now, out of this chaos, we're going to build a new world order. That's the bottom line. Now remember, in Bible prophecy, this is called the Great Tribulation. This is a problem that was predicted by the Creator himself and said, I'm going to help them along with their plan, and I'm going to punish you people down there for having given me the finger. All right, so now bend over and get your Vaseline out here, kids. There's no such thing as a free lunch. The details of this new tax proposal contradicted Shenandoah's no free lunch assertion. Remember, this is being diverted to transit and other non-highway activities. Even the money that is dedicated to highways is often earmarked for bridges to nowhere, and other projects aimed more at satisfying the egos of members of Congress than at improving transportation. Remember that bridge to nowhere up there in Alaska? That's not an accident. I mean, if anybody needed a bridge, you needed it down in New Orleans or someplace where people live. You don't need a bridge up here. What is it, $250 million? That's $250 million. $250 million bridge on Ketchikan Island. Over the past 15 years alone, America has spent well over $100 billion on rail transit construction projects, O'Toole added. What do we have for it? Transit has grown by 20%. While urban driving has grown by 50%. Every single dollar spent on rail transit construction is a dollar wasted, which is why raising gas taxes is the wrong solution to our mobility crisis. Gas taxes are being wasted. Robert Poole, Director of Transportation Studies at the Reason Foundation, agrees. Current tax revenues are being wasted. A large increase in the gas tax without fundamental reform in how and where the transportation money is being spent would be a step in the wrong direction, said Poole. This country definitely needs to spend more on transportation infrastructure, but we should not be giving a spendthrift Congress billions more to fritter away on bridges to nowhere. We need to target investments toward relieving congestion in our major urban areas and expand capacity for goods movement on major interstate routes. All right, let's pause here for a moment. Do you think that these members of Congress are so out of touch with reality that they're spending $250 million on a crummy bridge in Ketchikan, Alaska, instead of spending it in New York City or in New Orleans or someplace where there's a need? I tell you, boys and girls, these people aren't dumb. Ted Kennedy's no fool. Dianne Feinstein is no nut. These people know exactly what they're doing. There's an agenda out here. This agenda, which is being carried out by the Committee of 300, which is being implemented by our Congress and the parliaments and legislatures of the Western democracies of Europe and of Australia and Canada and New Zealand, this process is aimed at world government. You know, pay attention. Wake up. Smell the coffee. They're not making any mistakes. They have an agenda, and they're carrying it out, and it is working perfectly. It is on, well, it's not quite on schedule. They had hoped to have this thing accomplished by 2000. And at this juncture of time, they're probably 15 years behind schedule. But, you know, the fact that this is a fundamental worldwide change. Converting the world to a world government has been underway now for more than 250 years. And the fact that out of 250 years, they're off stride by 15 years, I think, is a major accomplishment. You know, give credit where credit's due. None of this benefits you or me. It benefits the elitists. Now, there's a group of people out here identified by a guy named John Coleman, who is an MI6 spook. John Coleman wrote a book called The Conspirators' Hierarchy, The Committee of 300. I'm reading from a second edition here. Listen to some of these names. I'm going to read off about 10 or 15 names here. These are names that you should recognize. Out of 300, Dean Acheson. Dean Acheson was Secretary of State in the Truman administration in the 1940s. John Jacob Astor and his successor, Waldorf Astor. Astor, remember, was one of the rich, you know, the filthy rich that died on the Titanic. Arthur Balfour. He's the guy that authored the Balfour Agreement that partitioned Palestine after World War I. Lord Beaverbrook, McGeorge Bundy, George Bush. Now that's referring to George Bush Sr. These are the movers and shakers now of world geopolitical policy. How about Joseph Califano in the Carter administration? He was a cabinet member. Lord Carrington, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill, remember that name? He was a member of the Committee of 300. Clark Clifford, Sir Alec Douglas Hume, Francois DuPont, Lloyd George. He was the Prime Minister of Great Britain during World War I. Lord Gladstone. Lord Halifax. Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. You know that sweet old lady, you know, that holds her hand up and waves to the people? This woman is a sociopath. This woman is a member of the Committee of 300. You know, we kind of look at Queen Elizabeth, well, isn't that a sweet, nice old lady? Her Majesty Queen Juliana of the Netherlands, Her Royal Highness Princess Beatrix, Aldous Huxley, John Maynard Keynes. Remember Keynes, the author of the economic policy here of the United States? Henry Kissinger, remember that guy, Secretary of State in the Nixon administration. Walter Lippmann, he was a newspaper man. Harold Macmillan, former Prime Minister of Great Britain. Francois Mitterrand. John P. Morgan, that's J.P. Morgan, Morgan Chase Bank. Remember that name? Lord Lewis Mountbatten. Mountbatten. That's the guy that Queen Elizabeth was, let's see, no, that's not the guy he's married to. That's Prince Philip. Lord Lewis Mountbatten, I forgot now, he was one of the Mountbattens. It's Philip's uncle, I believe it is. And Olaf Palme, that was a Swedish prime minister. Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh. His last name now is Mountbatten. Cecil Rhodes, remember the Rhodes Scholars? How about David Rockefeller? You can recognize that name, David Rockefeller. And then how about Baron Rothschild of the Rothschilds? Sir Bertrand Russell, George Shultz. He was a Secretary of State here under Kennedy and Johnson, I believe it was. Ted Turner. Remember the guy that created CNN, Ted Turner? Cyrus Vance. Earl Warren. Remember Earl Warren was the head of the Warren Commission when they investigated the Kennedy assassination? No wonder you got a decision out of the Kennedy assassination of a lone gunman. Earl Warren is one of the Committee of 300, for crying out loud. Caspar Weinberger. He was the Secretary of Defense, I believe, back in the Nixon years, I think it was. And H.G. Wells. Now, that's just a smattering, probably 20 names out of 300, of the people that actually run and set policy in the world. And the politicians, you know, the people like this Hillary Clinton and Obama, and who's this guy, running for president, Republican candidate. You know what I'm talking about, John something or other. I'll think of his name here in a minute, as soon as my Alzheimer's clears up. Anyway, these guys take their orders from the Committee of 300. That's what the bottom line is. Now, why is it that we get such contradictory reports? Why is it that, you know, you pick up a paper, you pick up a news article somewhere, and they're talking about coal power. You know, this is terrible stuff, this coal. You know, it's adding all this global warming, and what we need is alternative energy. And so some guy comes along and builds some windmills. Now, that's a good one. Let's talk about windmills for a second. Here in the environmental climate news, it's called the Environment and Climate News, there's a lead article here. It's entitled, Altamont Pass Settlement Fails to Reduce Bird Kills. Bird Kills. Altamont Pass Settlement. I got a picture here on the front page. And it shows a picture here of some windmills. The 5,000 wind turbines at Altamont Pass, California, kill thousands of birds, including endangered raptors, every year. Now, remember the environmental movement, the environmentalists, they come along and they decry the CO2 gas going into the atmosphere. And they tell us, we got to have more solar, we got to have more of this and that and other thing. But my God, don't come up with nuclear power now. We don't want that. So, they built 5,000 wind generators. Here in the United States, we produce about 1% of our power with what is known as alternative power sources. It can be solar power, biomass power, geothermal power, and so on. John McCain was the name I couldn't think about here. John McCain, he gets his orders from the Committee of 300. Queen Elizabeth is on that committee. Now, isn't that just real special? I thought we threw off this King George and this English monarchy over here in the Revolutionary War. What the hell is this Committee of 300 with Queen Elizabeth on here directing world geopolitical policy? All right, well, anyway, this Altamont Pass settlement. Listen to this article now. In January of 2007, an agreement intended to reduce the number of bird deaths from wind turbines at Altamont Pass, California, is failing, scientists report. And as a result, environmental groups are calling for additional restrictions on wind power generation at the nation's largest wind farm. I tell you, children, these environmentalists would bitch if you hung them with a new rope. These are the guys that are running around telling you, oh my God, the world's coming to an end because of global warming and CO2 in the atmosphere. I reported on that one here a couple of weeks ago. That's as phony as a $3 bill. And so they're telling us what we need is more and more wind generation, more and more solar power. Okay, so now we build it. There's 5,000 of these, 5,000 of these wind generators up here on this pass. Now you have to build these wind generators where the wind blows. Can you understand that? where the wind doesn't blow, wind generators are useless. All right. Now, if you can follow that, then they say thousands of kills annually. Wildlife groups have long objected to the deadly toll that wind turbines take on birds and bats. The wind farm at Altamont, with more than 5,000 turbines sprawling over more than 50 square miles of land, has been the poster child for that problem. Responding to environmental concerns that spawned a federal lawsuit, operators of the installation agreed in January of 2007 to a series of measures designed to reduce the roughly 1,700 to 4,700 bird deaths at Altamont Pass. All right, now, children, let's pause here for a second. Write that down. 1,700 to 4,700 bird deaths occurring at Altamont Pass from these wind turbines. Have you got that down? Plug it into your computer there. All right. How many birds are being killed up here at Altamont Pass? They tell us 1,700 to 4,700 birds per year. Okay? What's the difference between 1,700 and 4,700 birds? It's 64%. They can't even tell us within 60% as to how many birds are being killed. Well, wait a minute. Then how do you know 4,700 birds are being killed? Now listen, if you came up to me and you said, "Hey, farmer, how far is it to Gainesville?" And I say, "Somewhere between 3 and 10 miles." Would you come to the conclusion that I knew how far it was to Gainesville? Somewhere between 3 and 10 miles. That's the story here. Well, we don't know how many birds are being killed, but it's somewhere between 1,700 and 4,700 birds. How many wind generators are there at Altamont Pass? The answer is 5,000. Let's take the highest number, 4,700. Let's assume 4,700 birds are being killed. How many birds are being killed per wind turbine per year? And the answer is less than one bird per year at the high end. That's why I said, I mean, these fools would complain if you hung them with a new rope. You put up a $1 million installation. It generates electricity. Out of 365 days of operation, it kills 9/10 of one bird per year. Doesn't sound like the end of the world coming to me. And then somebody says, "Oh my God, but the aggregate is... it's 4,700. Hell, you don't know it's 4,700. You're guessing to within 64%, dummy. You couldn't tell me within 64% as to how many birds are being killed. The answer is, we don't know how many birds are being killed. But they filed a federal lawsuit, which doesn't mean a hell of a lot, because you can sit there and you can file suits all day long. Whether you can prevail or not is another issue. My point is this. These are the same people that have been bitching for years and years that we got to shut down the coal-fired power plants and replace it with alternative wind power. All right? So we go out and we replace it with alternative wind power. And then these same fools come back and say, "Oh my God, you're killing the bird! Shut it down!" Well, what in the hell are you going to replace it with? Another coal-fired power plant? What kind of a power plant should we build in the Altamont Pass? Bird lovers? Give us an answer, would you? And send your email to the Gordon Law School. I'll read it on the air. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here, children, that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. In the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one. All you have to do is call the law school and ask for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications used on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about seeds of destruction. Now, the primary subject when we think about seeds of destruction comes from the GMOs, genetically modified organisms. I contend that there's more to the seeds of destruction than just the genetically modified organisms, but also the first horse of the four horsemen of the book of Revelation, which is an extrapolation of Matthew 24, and that is false prophets, deception. And boys and girls, we are being deceived. We're being lied to. And it's not accidental. The politicians are lying to us because they get their orders from the Committee of 300. The Committee of 300 are the sociopaths who are hell-bent on creating this new world order, which is ushering in this biblical catastrophe called Jacob's Trouble or the Great Tribulation. All right, now with that, you know, in our brain, that's our theory. If you'd like a copy of the Committee of 300, you want to write to John Coleman, then it's published by the Joseph Publishing Company, a division of Joseph Holding Corporation, and the address is 2533 North Carson Street, Carson City, Nevada, 89706. Again, that's Joseph Publishing Company, 2533 North Carson Street, Carson City, Nevada, 89706. I don't see a telephone number here, so if you want to look it up on the Internet, do a Google search. You're looking for John Coleman, Joseph Publishing Company, or the Committee of 300. Would probably get you that information. All right, now let's take a look at another part of the story over here called the wind power. See if I can find it here. Now, we're taking this information out of the Environment and Climate News. I subscribe. I recommend it. I think it's a good publication. I'm kind of taking them to task here in this issue on a couple of articles. I'm looking for another one here. Over time, nuclear power skeptic becomes an advocate. I'll tell you about that later. There's another story in here that deals with wind power. And, oh, shucks. How come I can't find that? Altamont. Scientists recommend stronger action to decrease bird kills. And I'll just tell you the story. Out of Ohio, the Ohio legislature was considering a bill to put in some wind generation operations. Now, remember, these wind generators, they're uneconomical. If you want to generate electricity, you generate electricity by burning coal or natural gas, or you run a hydroelectric plant. And that's the cheapest form of electricity that you can get. So the environmentalists, they come along and they say, well, my God, it's causing global warming. Or they come along and they say, well, it's putting so much CO2 into the air that we gotta go to alternatives. Here it is. The leader of the Ohio Environmental Group testifies against wind power. Let me read that headline to you again. No, it's not the head of Peabody Coal testifying before the legislature of Ohio against wind power. No, no, it's not the chairman of the board of Exxon Corporation testifying against wind power. No, no, it's the leader of Ohio Environmental Group who is testifying against wind power, which is why I said a little earlier, I mean, these people would complain if you hung them with a new rope. So you got to ask yourself the question, well, what in the hell is going on here? On the one hand, these guys are advocating wind power, solar power, alternative power alternatives. And then when the legislature of Ohio comes in and says, okay, well, let's take up this bill. Ask yourself this question. Why is the legislature even talking about wind power? It's because of the political pressure put on by these environmental groups. Why would we consider wind power anyway? It costs more than coal power. Well, because somebody has to subsidize the difference between the cost of producing wind power and the cost of producing coal-fired power. And that's the taxpayers. Let's think about it. You want to buy electricity, and so the public utility in your neighborhood says it's $50 a month. And so they burn some coal, pollute your air, add CO2 to the atmosphere, and deliver your electric power for $50 a month. And you go out and work doing whatever you do to earn the money to pay the $50 a month so that you can flip on the switch and read your newspaper. Now, things are going along pretty good, and some leader of an environmental group says, oh my God, they're polluting the air. We have to have alternative sources of power. Let's put in wind power. But if they delivered your electricity to you from wind power, they would have to charge you $65 a month because it's not as economical as coal-fired power. So they propagandize you and they say, if you don't change over to wind power over here, son, you're going to strangle to death on your own pollution. And you're going to destroy the earth and flood all of Miami, and so we've got to have wind power. All right. So you buy into the program, and you say, well, okay, let's buy into the power. Now, what happens is you have to work to pay $50 to deliver the coal-fired power, and now you got to work to produce $15 a month to produce this wind power. This is called a subsidy. Now, the only people that believe in subsidies are the people that collect the subsidies. The rest of us who are paying the subsidies don't want to buy it.
I don't want to buy $65 a month electricity. I want to buy $50 a month electricity. But the guy says, they're going to kill you with this CO2 and you're going to flood Miami. So I've got to have $65 electricity. All right. So now we pay the extra $15 a month. But it doesn't get paid to the power company. It gets paid in your taxes. And the state gets involved because they're collecting your taxes and paying it over to the operators of the wind farm. Now, why did we want to build the wind farm? It's because of the environmental groups. So here's the story. Tom Stacey, the managing director of the environmentalist group Save Western Ohio, presented compelling testimony to the Ohio House of Representatives, the Public Utilities Committee, that a proposed renewable power mandate would substantially harm the environment and local communities. The mandate, Stacey noted, would cause the construction of a growing number of wind turbines, a poor source of energy that harms wildlife and takes up excessive amounts of land. All right, so they come to us and they say, well, we need wind power to generate our electricity. Then when we come to the legislature and say, okay, we want to build it out here, he comes in and testifies, no, we don't want to build a wind-powered farm or a wind power plant out here. Why, it kills birds. How many birds does it kill? Well, within 64%, somewhere around 9/10 of a bird per windmill per year. Hell, it would look like to me that that's almost about the safety record that we have killing people in automobiles, isn't it? We haven't banished automobiles because we kill 40,000 people a year, but we want to banish the wind farm because it kills 9/10 of a bird per year. I would say that if you could build a $1 million installation and it only kills one bird a year, that's a pretty damn safe installation. Doesn't kill people, doesn't kill cows, doesn't kill anything else, just kills birds. Hell, it doesn't kill the fast birds, it only kills the slow ones and keeps them from reproducing. You know, ultimately, all of the birds, when it's all said and done, out of the evolution that is being created here by the wind generator, is going to create faster, more efficient birds who will not be hit by the blades of these wind turbines. Now listen, I don't know if you've ever seen one of these wind turbines, but I've got a windmill out here in my North 40. When the wind blows, it blows so fast you cannot see the blades in the turbine, in the fan. On these wind turbines, they have three great big blades, and these blades must be 50 feet long. I mean, they are absolutely humongous. This tower that it sits on probably is, I'd guesstimate it's 100, maybe 150 feet tall. And it's got this three-blade turbine on here, and it turns so slow. I mean, hell, as old and as clumsy as I am, pushing 70, I could jump out of the way for crying out loud. Let me tell you, any bird that gets killed in one of those big wind turbines, as slow as it turns, needs to be killed to call out the weak birds and the slow ones from the population, for crying out loud. I'm an old man, for crying out loud, and I can jump out of the way. And this guy comes up here and he says, well, we want alternative energy sources, but we don't want wind power in Western Ohio. That's one of those, well, not in my backyard type things. They did that up in Massachusetts. Some outfit came in up there and they said, okay, we want to build this wind generating operation out here in the tidal basin along the coast because the wind blows there. And I don't know about you, but I can understand that, you see. If you're going to build a solar plant someplace, you'd want to build it where the sun shines, wouldn't you? And if you wanted to build a hydropower plant, you'd want it someplace where the water runs, wouldn't you? So just my common sense says, well, if you wanted to build a wind power generator, you'd want to build it somewhere where the wind blows. So they found a place up in Massachusetts where the wind blows, and they said, well, let's put it out there where the wind's blowing. And then we can produce this clean energy up here, and as a result of that, then these environmentalists can go home, sit down, and shut up for a change. We have a little peace and quiet. Oh, no. Somebody jumped up and said, oh, my God, we can't have it out there. It's an eyesore. You're going to build it out here on the tidal flats. Well, maybe it's an eyesore for the 50 people that live up there on the tidal flat, but what about all the other people who live in Boston? They ain't going to see them. I mean, for 5 million people living in Boston, they couldn't care less. And for the 50 people living out, it kind of reminds me of the Grand Canyon. The elitists who raft up and down the Grand Canyon, they don't want to build any dams there. The Grand Canyon has got to be the best location for building hydropower plants God ever put on planet Earth. And what do they use it for? Well, rafting up and down the river. When was the last time you rafted down the Colorado River, Bob? Hell, you haven't even seen the bottom of the Colorado River. That's why I said best place to build a reservoir is in the Grand Canyon. And by the way, if you did that, you could probably generate enough electricity to solve all your problems out there in the West. Well, anyway, just wanted to point out to you, this leader of the Ohio Environmental Group testifies against wind power proposal. It ain't necessary for him to go any further than that. Notice it's not Peabody Coal Company testifying. Now, who is it that's opposed to wind power? All the people that are selling coal. Hell, if I was selling coal, I'd be against wind power. Now, frankly, I'm against wind power and these alternative sources because it's economically not viable. And when it becomes economically viable, you don't need government getting involved. Somebody will go out there and build a wind power plant because it makes money. That's a marketplace decision. Now, there's two ways to approach this. You can have big government from the top-down management, or you can have limited government from the free market modality or methodology. Now, here in America, we have stamped out our free market, and we have adopted communist top-down methodology. Well, okay. Now we've got it. And so now from the top down, our government's going to dictate our policy. And so they're going to tell us, well, what is it that we're going to have? You and I don't need to really get involved in this. We don't need to expend a whole lot of adrenaline on this problem. You are never going to get wind power, solar power, or alternative electrical sources because the status quo controls our parliament, controls our Congress. The mouthpieces that are going to testify are always going to be the environmentalists, who are the lapdogs of the coal and the oil interests. That's who they work for. And in fact, the Sierra Club, one of the biggest environmental groups in the United States, the biggest single funder for that group is ARCO, that's Atlantic Richfield, an oil company. So, you see, it wouldn't look intelligent for Peabody Coal to come into the legislature and testify against wind power. That's too obviously self-serving. So, the Peabody Coal Company finances the environmental groups. The environmental groups jump up and down, throw temper tantrums all over the place, demanding that we have wind power and alternative energy sources, which are totally uneconomical. If they were economic, somebody would build them. Just out of financial greed. And since they're financially uneconomical, then you have to have subsidies. Somebody has to come in here and pay up the difference between what it costs to produce it and what you're selling it for. Somebody has to make that up. And that's called the taxpayer. That's you and me. So if you want to pay for that through taxes, well, that's the way you pay your power bill, through your taxes. The way you pay your hospital bill, your taxes. It's called socialized medicine. So then this environmental guy comes in. He says, oh, no, we can't have that here. This is a bad idea. Let's not have a wind power plant here in Ohio. Which then leaves you with what? Leaves you with what you've already got. Coal-fired power, which is exactly what we want, which is exactly what the status quo calls for. So what in the hell is all this jumping up and down, ranting and raving, and pawing the ground, biting the bushes, and raising hell over? Just nonsense. Nothing more, nothing less. But they get us all excited, don't they? And then they generate these two sides. We've got the environmentalists over here on one side, and they send out a letter to all their members and say, oh my God, look what the oil companies are doing now. Send us $50 and two bits in a box top too. Your favorite environmental group. And so that generates millions of dollars for those guys. Then on the other side over here, there's another group, and they jump up and down and say, oh my God, look what these environmentalists are doing now. Why, they're trying to saddle us with more taxes, building these crazy projects over here with all these subsidies and their big government programs. And so therefore, you send your $50 and two bits in a box top to your favorite free market group, the Cato Institute or somebody else, or the Hoover Group or a bunch. And so then the group, they send their money in. And as long as there's all this controversy going on, there's money to be made. But it never solves the problem. Never. So we get to pay more money for electricity, whether we use it or not, whether we need it or not, whether it's economical or not. And it doesn't do anything to the coal-fired power plants, doesn't change jack diddly squat on either side. But boy, it generates a lot of money and a lot of adrenaline. Now, here in the same environmental news is an article on overtime nuclear power skeptic becomes an advocate. I thought this was a tremendous article over here. I'll bring it to you next time. And we'll talk about nuclear power for all of you crazies out there. Oh my God, nuclear power! That gets your adrenaline flowing, doesn't it? I mean, the thought of Three Mile Island and Chernobyl and nuclear power. Well, that'll get you to send $50 and two bits in a box top, won't it? We'll see if we can get you to do that next time. Meanwhile, let me remind you that this information is coming from the publication, which is entitled The Environment and Climate News. I recommend it, keeping in mind that we don't recommend every single article that we see in here. We just the Environment and Climate News, which is put out by the Heartland Institute, located at 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903 in Chicago, Illinois, 60603. I don't know what the price of it is. I don't pay the bills here, so that's why I don't know. Their telephone number is 312-377-4000. Again, that's 312-377-4000. And they're pretty good about telling you where the environmental wackos is, as they're sometimes called by Rush Limbaugh, are located and what they're doing. Yeah, I'm out of time again. I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet daily. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.